Hey.
Hey everybody, welcome to Retrievolution. So we've got Eve Higgins and I'm Jennifer Henyon. Eve, what are we talking about today?
Today we're going to be talking about marking ability, how to train it, what's natural, all that kind of stuff. So we were at a unsanctioned 10 singles event this weekend, which is it's kind of what it sounds like. It's not a dating thing. It's a 10 there's like a group of dogs and they compete to do each dog gets at least 4 marks and then they start eliminating dogs and making it harder and harder. And it's surprisingly pretty competitive, but it was actually a really fun, lower pressure event, but still, yeah, people are still taking it very seriously. It was really fun.
So there's 10 marks throughout the day, like Eve said, and it just gets harder and harder, but it's kind of a fun experience to practice.
Yeah, Harry did really well, and I learned a whole lot.
Yeah, Bixby did really well too. And we're going to talk about how practice and experience builds the dog's skill, because that's what Eve experienced with Bixby at this event.
Yeah, totally. We haven't trained a whole lot since we got destroyed in the Derby in July. So that was like, what, 3 months ago, it feels like. And we've literally not trained anything. So throughout the day, he improved so much. It was really cool to see.
Yeah, so let's define what marking is, and then I want to ask you a quick question about what you learned from the Derby experience about marking, and then what you learned from the 10 singles about marking.
Totally.
And then we
Yeah.
can dive into the three parts about marking and answer
Yeah.
some questions.
Yeah, sounds good. So I came up with this definition, and feel free to add to it. So marking is the dog's ability to observe and mentally record the location of a fallen bird or bumper and accurately retrieve it by using their visual memory.
Okay, where did you get that definition?
It was partly online and partly adding to it.
Okay.
Help of the internet.
I like it. So what did you learn about marking from your Derby experience?
I learned that you actually have to train it. It doesn't just come for free. I focused a whole lot on kind of the mechanics and technical training skills of like lining up and retrieving to hand and whistle sits. I focused so much on that so far in Bixby's training, and I kind of just thought he's a retriever. The retrieving will come for free. I don't need to do that. But in the Derby, there's people in white that stand like way, way out. So we had gone to like one or two field trainings, and he didn't really know that he's supposed to look for the people in white to like help him mark where the thing's gonna land. So he didn't really see it. And if I had trained him that people in white are important, I think it would have been a really helpful thing for him. So I think I underestimated the value of training marking.
Interesting. And then what was your big takeaway from this weekend's 10 singles event? Because that's like a couple months after your Derby experience, right?
Yeah, I would say pretty much the same thing. I did mentally learn my lesson, but I didn't actually put it into action and train anything. So literally, like you look at the scoreboard and his first mark was like really low, and each one after that was higher and higher. It was like, would have been a positive graph if you charted it. And then he got cut after the first four, because I had to handle on like three out of the first four, which he handled really beautifully. If it was a handling competition, it would have been so over for everyone, but it was not. So we got cut. And he got to be test dog for the rest of it. And like, you talked me into doing being the test dog for one that I thought would be too hard for him. And he did really, really well. So it was dramatic, the improvement he got from just the experience throughout the day.
It's super important, and I could tell he was getting better. Like it in the first few marks, he wasn't real sure or confident of what he was supposed to do. Like, is it his job or are you working as a team?
Yeah,
He
he
was
looked
looking
for
to
me for a lot
you.
of help.
Right. Even though he took a great line, he would still, if he didn't find it right away, he would stop and look for help, which, that's an experience thing, right? So as he gained experience throughout the day, he started to trust himself and trust what was going on.
And
And
also I was like delaying. So I used to like when he would turn around and look for me for help, I would give it to him and start handling. So it was reinforcing that if he doesn't know what to do, I'm going to help him out. And then I've stopped doing that. So I think he's like, all right, I guess I'm on my own here.
but I noticed on the fifth mark, he put his nose down and started hunting. It's like he didn't even think about stopping. It wasn't even a thought. So that's what told me on that fifth mark that he could be test dog for seven and eight, because he was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, that's
And
cool. I didn't notice that.
yeah. And so then on seven and eight, which were very long marks, and they were actually thrown towards each other. They were singles, but being thrown toward each other makes it a bit of a mental task for the dog as well. But anyway, he did great. He just flew out there, got to the mark, didn't even think about stopping.
Yeah, I was really happy with that.
And I want to say too, real quick before we move on, because this is a question that people asked for us to cover in this call or in this podcast episode, was the return. His return and delivery improved as for each mark. It's like at first, it's like, oh my God, I have a bird. Can I please enjoy it for a
Yeah.
second?
It
And so
was so novel because we haven't done it in so long. He's like, this is amazing. There's no way I'm going to give it up.
exactly. It's been a while. And then as the marks progressed, he was just like coming all the way in. Here you go, Mom. Let me do another one.
Let's do it again. Yeah. I was glad they ran it. So you get to do, it was two singles at a time. I was worried it was going to be one single and then the dog goes away. And I was scared that was going to punish him for bringing it back. Like, you brought it back, now it's game over. So it was nice we got to do two in a row.
And then you have time to also do a reward sequence after you leave the line, and they have time to enjoy. But
Yeah, for sure.
cool. Well, so today we had about four or five questions about marking, and they were great because each one of them fell into a different area of marking, and I kind of created a little chart that there are three parts to marking, three major parts. The first one is instinct or genetics or what you're born with. One of the questions we got was about that. That's the first like big deal, is what is your dog born with instinct wise? The second big part is teaching it and the mechanics involved in marking, such as sitting at heel and being steady so you can focus on the flight of the bird and where it landed, right? So that's a mechanic. So first of all, instinct. Second of all, what have you taught, the mechanics of it. The third part of it is simply experience, and practicing. So that gives the dog, like we were talking about with Bixby, the more he did it, the more he realized what was going on. And with that experience and practice, his skill improved. So those are the three major parts that we're gonna try to fit everything into today. So one of the questions we got was, is marking something that's genetic that the dog either has or doesn't have because of what they're born with? Or is it something that is trained? And the answer is it's both, but I want to talk about that genetics question. It's not, I don't like to use the word genetics. I like to use the term, what is your dog born with? Because in a litter of puppies, that can be radically different from puppy to puppy. So, how I like to talk about this is the instinct. So, how much instinct was your dog born with? What is the instinct? So, it's the dog's ability to hunt or their natural inclination to want to hunt, to stalk their prey, to chase the prey, and then to catch the prey. So that's what the arc of instinct is. How much of that did your dog get when they were born? Reggie, his was low. When he sees a bird fly for a mark, because of his experience, he's very happy to chase and catch. Only because of really his experience and the reward of that. Harry came out of the womb wanting to stalk. He stalks robins. He stalks squirrels. And he's super focused on it.
Like a border collie, he like kind of creeps up.
Like a border collie is so funny, or a pointer. So he's wired for that and loves to chase and will stay focused for a super long chase until he catches whatever it is. So that's a huge part of his makeup. What would you say for Bixby on that?
I was gonna ask you about that because it's like he likes to chase things that are moving, like deer or squirrels. He doesn't stalk so much except for when it's the squeaky ball. He'll like get a little creepy. But his instinct is so specific to ducks. Like he doesn't care about songbirds or like anything besides ducks in particular. It's very funny. And like dead ducks too. Like if we're out walking and there's like ducks in the water that are alive, I think he might know that they can get away, and so he's not as interested.
Whereas Harry, if he sees ducks in the water, he'll come up like a border collie to the pond, and then when he sees any kind of opportunity, he just dives in and starts swimming. He's like, let me try to catch these things. So
Funny.
it's, yeah, definitely it's something that they're born with, but it's not either or. It's, even if you have a dog that's born with low instinct, like Reggie, you can still train your dog and give him the experience and practice that's going to still build his marking ability. Another question we got, Eve, regarding the other two parts. Amy asked, how do you start doubles? Her dog is going to the very first thing that she tosses instead of the second thing. And typically, we want our dog to go to the second thing that was tossed and then go to the first one. So that's
Why?
why.
Yeah.
That was a good question. Mainly because when it's set up in a hunt test or a field trial, the dog will typically want to go get that second bird because of the way it's presented. And also, if the dog tries to go for something other than the last thing thrown, that last thing thrown is going to be a distraction. Even though they want the first thing and they may get it, it might influence their ability to remember where the second thing landed, or they might be halfway out to the first thing because they really wanted that, and then curl over to get the second thing.
And then it
Because
kind of like messes up in their mind the picture of where everything landed.
exactly, which is an element of marking.
Yeah.
So,
So, but there would never be a situation in a field trial or a test where they would say, like, get it in this order, right?
right,
Like, get.
they can't dictate that to you, but guess what? The judges are going to set up the test in such a way that the order you send your dog matters in their ability to get the mark. And that's a hard thing to get or understand until you experience it. All of these things, all of these three parts of marking also apply to us as handlers, except maybe the instinct part, but we need the experience and practice. We need the training too to understand it. So, okay, what's next, Eve?
Wait, so how would you train the dog to go to the mark or the go bird and not the memory?
Yeah, so that boils down to your mechanics. How are you throwing the two items? So, are you throwing them super close together? Are you making the first one more exciting than the second one? So, well, how you develop that, especially with a young dog, is you throw them 180 degrees apart. So the first one you would throw, like if you were standing in the center of a clock, you would throw the first one directly to the left or right. So let's say you're going to throw it to the right. So you'd throw it to 3 o'clock. But you and your dog would be facing 3 o'clock also. So both of you are looking at the three. You throw the thing to the three. Then you pivot and face the dog to the nine. And you would throw the thing to the nine and maybe say, quack, quack, quack. And immediately send the dog so they get it. And as they come back, you can pivot to face the 3 o'clock to get that bird. Once you get the mechanics down and the flow, then you start making the throws closer together.
Right. I like that because then if the dog goes out to get the, what, 9 o'clock one, whatever one landed last, they're basically having to pass you if they want to try and go get the other one.
Exactly.
Just intercept them, grab it, and send them to the second bird or dummy.
Yeah. Another big part of that, speaking of mechanics, and this takes experience also. But what we want in our mechanics is for the dog to go where we're facing. So whether you've thrown a triple or a double or whatever, the mechanics are we're in heel position and we're facing the one that I want. So go to that one and then come back into heel position. And now we'll face toward the next one that I want. So that's mechanics. That's kind of something you're working on right now.
I'm just gonna say, yeah, we've been working on so we, when there's like triples in a field trial, you I guess in a hunt test too, you can like walk up to the line and like show them each mark before you signal that you're ready for them to throw. So we've been working on food bowl marks and then like having Bixby pull away from something that he thinks is exciting and he wants to keep staring or be sent to. Pulling away from that and showing him that we're going to go in a different direction, which is super hard for him.
Yeah,
But we're breaking it down with food, and that's helpful.
just to clarify something you said about hunt test. In a hunt test, you're not actually allowed to clearly show the dog the marks before signaling the judge.
Oh, okay.
That's only in a field trial.
So if you try to do that, they'll stop you?
They probably won't stop you, but they might fail you.
Or just they'll send the birds while you're trying to do it.
No, I don't think they would do that. But so in a hunt test, if you go up for a double or a triple, what you want to do is go to the line, sit your dog somewhere facing the middle of the action, And just give the dog a minute to scan the field. Your dog's going to be looking for stations if your dog has the experience to know why you're there, right? So give the dog a minute to look around himself to see. Then the cool thing about hunt tests is they start each mark with blowing a duck call. So that pulls your dog's attention to where it's going to be. But in a field trial, they don't do that, but they do have white jackets. So you go to the line and you're actually allowed to show the dog each mark and really focus on it for a second and then signal for your birds. So should we talk about another
Yeah, how about the
idea?
first one? How to help a dog that leaves the area of the fall?
Right. So Christine asked that question. And what she's talking about there is kind of what was happening with Bixby in a way, which was going out to a mark, not finding it right away, and then thinking to themselves, well, it's not here. So I either need help or I'm going to leave the scene and go see if it's where I found something before, which would have been another mark, right?
I don't know about field trials, but in a hunt test, you'll get marked down if they're like if they initiate the hunt and like start looking around and then leave. You'll
Yeah,
get.
in fact, and if they leave and go to a different mark area, it's actually an automatic elimination.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
So that might be a situation where you would choose to handle.
If your dog started doing that, yeah. But what you can do to build your dog. So this question falls under the third part of marking, which is experience and practice. When a dog is leaving the area of a fall or asking for help, it indicates that they don't have perseverance or the experience to trust that it's going to be there and that it's their job to hunt it up. So, what you would want to do there is her question was, how do you help a dog that leaves the area of a fall? And to help the dog, in my opinion, is you first give it experience to keep persevering, right? Instead of continuing on with marks that are too hard or too close together that they want to leave. So giving your dog just short marks that are thrown into cover. And then maybe given a time lapse in between the time that you threw it in there and the time that you send the dog, so they don't really remember as well. And then they have to put on a hunt.
Would you help them, like, so if they are leaving and you've made it too hard, would you handle them back to the area and ask them to keep searching?
Either that or ask the gunner to help, which would be coming out, walking toward, maybe doing a fake throw or walking toward where the bird is, getting the dog's attention
Okay.
are helpful. Yeah. And then the next thing would be handling. Why don't we want them to handle? It's because the dog starts to rely on that.
Like Bixby.
Yeah. So the best possible thing is to have the gunner come out and help. So.
Okay. So that helps make it clear in the dog's mind that if it's a mark, it's their responsibility, and if it's a blind, then my handler is going to help me.
Right. Yeah. And again, if you're having trouble like that, it's not just how do I fix the problem in the moment? It's how do I build the dog's skill that I want to happen? Always ask yourself, what do I want? And build that. So hopefully those are great questions that helped illustrate the importance of each of those three parts. But hopefully you see that all three parts are necessary, and each of those parts can actually compensate for minuses. So if your dog isn't born with great or strong instincts, your teaching and mechanics and your experience can compensate for that. If your dog is weak on training and mechanics, or even experience, especially experience, and your dog has strong instincts, that's going to compensate for the other two.
That makes me so excited for the next hunt season or the test season, I guess, because Bixby's got decent genetics, and his training and experience is a little bit lacking. His training is good, his experience is very much lacking,
Right.
and I can control that, and I think he can come a long way, so I'm excited.
Oh, I love that you put it that way. That's exactly right. Whatever area of the three that might be lacking, you have control over it. You can help it.
Except for genetics, if you already have the dog.
No, like I was saying earlier, if your dog lacks instinct, you can o you compensate for that with
Oh,
training
true.
experience.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, I
yeah.
feel like the dogs that are like less instinctual, their training is so impressive to watch. Like they're way cleaner. Like my friend has a show golden that is he's kind of like a little slow and ditzy, and you wouldn't think he'd be like such a machine in the field, but you see him out there, and his training is really impressive.
Oh, really?
I think the clarity around his training, it like turns him on in a way that he looks like a field golden.
Interesting. Yeah, when you get all three of those parts really humming, it's a thing of beauty and it's so fun.
Yeah, Harry was really cool to watch. He made it to the final round, and the final round was insane. I can talk a little bit about it. I wanted to go over, like, I made a list of different factors that can make marking easier or harder. And on the final mark of the 10 singles event, it was like all the things pushed all the way to the max difficulty. It was outrageous, but he did so well. It was fun to watch him.
Yeah, I was excited that he did so well. He was tied for first place for the first seven marks. Like he was in the lead, and then in the seventh mark series, he was tied for first. And then he didn't see the eighth mark land. And when I was looking at the video of it, I could barely see that bird
His
on.
was a dark bird. Bixby, when he was a test dog, it was like a white, flashy bird. I could barely see Harry's bird. It was a tough
Yeah.
one.
Yeah. But anyway, it was a fun experience. What was your favorite part of that experience with you and Bixby? Would you say?
Seeing his improvement, and like, I'm very excited for like next year. It's so over for everyone. Just as soon as I start training, y'all are done.
Was kind of mad that Bixby did better on that series than Harry.
Yeah, you'll get there someday. I believe in you. I just got to keep training, Jen.
Yeah, I'll get there. I'll catch up with you guys pretty soon.
Yeah, I'll show you what I know.
Yeah. Did
Well,
you have fun? Was it like fun to watch
yeah.
Bixby nail that seven and
Oh
eight?
my God, yeah. I was so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I didn't think he was going to get it. I was thinking we were going to have to handle. And there was like a moment where he paused and was like, "Here it is. I got my whistle ready." And he kept searching, persevering. It was really cool.
Which
That was
didn't
like a
take
point of
long.
reaction. Yeah. And he's like, "Oh, it's over here." So that was nice that he was reinforced for continuing to hunt.
Yeah. You
Couldn't
know,
have got better if I set it up.
one of the big takeaways, I kept listening to the two judges talking to each other, and the one judge was very experienced. And it was interesting to me because it wasn't necessarily about taking a super straight line It was about, does the dog know exactly where the bird landed? And so, like, Harry took on two of the marks, he got a 10, a highest like score he could get, which was a 10 from that judge. And I was kind of surprised because Harry took a little bit of a left to go around some sort of hazard. But when he got there, he didn't put on a hunt. He knew exactly where the bird was. He went there and picked it up. That's like the instinct of the chase and catch part. And that's what they were looking for. And it was, so I was like, oh, right. It
Yeah,
just
more
kind of.
like they would get demerits if they were distracted by a hazard or like looking behind the wrong hay bale. But if they didn't take a super straight line, that was okay.
Right. Or if the dog got out there and started putting on a little hunt. Like I noticed on the ninth mark, which I thought Harry did super well because he took a great line. He was about 8 feet from the bird, but something caught his eye to the
Oh,
left.
yeah.
So he took a like a 90-degree turn to go check out what that was. He's like, oh no, that's not it. And then he went straight to the bird. And I thought, oh well, that's not a big deal. But he only got like a total of 7 on
Really?
arc. So I
I
was
got
like,
a 7 when I handled.
yeah. So it was interesting of like super defined mark, marking definition. But let's go over your list, Eve. So what do you have here?
Yeah, I think this hopefully will help give people an idea of like different things they can train, because sometimes I get out to the field and I'm like kind of stuck, like, okay, we're gonna throw birds, but like where, how far? So these are all the things I could think of that could make a mark harder or easier, but feel free to add to it. So cover, which is like how tall the grass or shrubs are. So like a manicured golf course is going to be really easy for the dog to see where it lands, because like they can see it from where they are unless they're really far away. But like here in Bend, there's not many areas like that. It's a lot of like thick shrubs. So once the thing lands, they have to remember, oh, okay, it's like this far from that tree and like 10 degrees to my left, and I'll run over there, and then they're probably gonna have to hunt. So that
Right.
would be harder.
It's a big deal, cover.
Yeah.
Dogs don't want to necessarily go through cover because it slows them down and it's a hazard.
Yeah, that's another one. So, like hazards on the line. So, say the thing lands on perfectly short grass, but then in between that, there's tall grass that ideally they would run right through. It's kind of like water. Like they might cheat the hazard. They might want to go around it and then go back, which isn't necessarily desirable, and it could throw them off. Like if it's, it could knock them off the straight line and they could get a little
Exactly.
bit lost.
Yeah. And let's talk about that young dog who took a hazard, which was there was a dry, like a pond with no water in it, but it had an island and it was really like uneven ground, super uneven. And this dog's going full bore, taking that hazard and did like a cartwheel,
Like
right?
180 degrees in the air. I just saw its legs come up for like a second, and everybody in the gallery was like, oh, is it okay? And then it kept going, got the bird, like a
Yeah.
pretty psycho.
It
Scared.
turned out to be fine. And that's happened to Reggie before, more than once. But the point that I'm trying to make is that dogs are smart. They know that that crap can happen. And so they want to avoid hazards so that that doesn't happen. But
So
anyway.
an easy thing would be just don't have any hazards, and then to make it harder, you have like the retrieve object like directly on the other side. So that kind of like water, you like forces them to go right through it.
Or attracts them too, yeah.
Right. The contrast or color of the retrieve object. So, like Harry's bird on the seventh mark, was it?
Eighth, yeah.
Eighth. It was dark on a dark ground. Oh, and also the one where it like landed in the shade. There was one mark that landed in the shade, and I couldn't see it from the gallery. So to make it easier, you would have like a bunch of flags on the bumper, and so in the when it's going through the sky, it's like really loud and sh shouting at the dog, "Here I am." Yeah, but
That's a
then.
big deal. That's why, when Eve and I first got together for training, she brought a bunch of orange bumpers for us to do marking exercises. And dogs can't see orange. What? So if you want to develop, and she didn't know, she was new to it.
I like kind of knew, but that's what I had. So I was like, I can see it. It's different texture. It should be fine.
Yeah.
Turns
And
out
he
it's
did.
not.
And he did do fine, but one of the things that happened was that he would get out to the area of the fall and not find it because he couldn't see it. And that would, it's it caused him to have to hunt around and he lost confidence. So you get out to the place where you think it landed and you don't find it as a young dog starting marking, and it kind of depletes their confidence.
Totally. So the next one is distance, and I think this is the one Bixby. It's like the low-hanging fruit. I think we can get a lot more distance with some more practice. So I use the hand launcher, the like DT Systems Pro, and I would kind of have him maybe 10 feet from me, not to blast his ears off, and I would launch it, and it goes like 75 yards. And so at about 75 yards is when he starts looking for help. If the mark is farther than that, he's like, couldn't possibly be farther than this. So, something I noticed at the 10 singles event is handlers were queuing on the last mark when it was like, what, 400 yards away. They were saying, way out, way out. So, that was smart.
Yeah. Distance. You say that often about your hand launcher and that he won't go past that distance, but yeah, it's definitely something that it experience and practice, and it fixes it like that day. That the 7 and 8 mark that he did great on were pushing like 175 yards, I think, maybe more. So he got that, he got that pretty fast, like within one day. So
Yeah, totally. That's why I say low hanging fruit. Like, that's, I think he'll get that as long as we just keep practicing.
yeah, and if but that is a danger, you're right. And a lot of people fall into that trap of either just throwing with your hand and how far can you throw, right? And then, or hand launcher, how far can it go? But so a good way to fix that is if you're by yourself, put the dog in a sit stay on a mat or a platform, walk out and then shoot it or throw it and send them.
Yeah.
So what's next on your list?
The angle at which the thrower throws the thing. So I imagine if, we're face to face and I'm throwing it directly towards you, I think that might be harder. Is that right?
Yeah, for sure.
Or like directly, if it's like on the line, if the thrower is on the line, either front or ahead, I think that would be a little harder rather than like 90 degrees out.
For sure, yeah. The more angled back or in that it is, the harder it is to see the depth.
Right.
So that's definitely something to practice.
The old retrieve smell. So like there were four retrieves in the area and then we moved to a different one, but the dogs were basically running to where the old marks were, like the dogs were running across that area.
Right.
So there was like just all kinds of smells and things that they had seen before. So a lot of dogs were like checking to see if the bird landed in a spot it landed for a previous mark. That
Yeah.
makes it harder.
Yeah. It's the old fall, and we were using birds. And that can happen at a hunt test or a field trial where on Friday they hold the qualifying stake in a field with a live flyer station and two other marks. And then the next day they'll run the amateur through that same area. And then on Sunday they might run the derby through that same field. So there's a lot of old scent, and that's definitely a factor.
Yeah. And then similarly, if other dogs have run on the line, like I think it's advantageous to go last in the running order. Is that right? Because then you can kind of see and smell the tracks where the other dogs have run.
That's true if the other dogs did a good job.
True.
Yeah.
Or it could throw them off. So depending.
Yeah, it's never all one or the other.
Yeah. So arousal is something like I think that's the Yerkes-Dodson rule. Like if the dog is not aroused enough, they're not gonna remember or like care where the bird landed. And if they're out of their minds, it's also gonna scramble their brains. So they want to be kind of right in the middle.
That's such a good point. Yeah.
And the
Yeah.
first
Yeah.
mark of the 10 singles was a live flyer. So that was pretty exciting.
The first mark, you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which was kind of cool. At first, I was questioning that, but then I was like, yeah, that gets the dog's arousal level up to be excited for the next nine,
Yeah.
hoping there might be another live flyer.
Yeah. I haven't noticed yet that Bixby cares about live flyers any more than dead ducks.
Yeah, that's another good point. And that lands in the third part, which is experience and practice. The more they experience that, the more they realize what it is. And some dogs, you're right. I mean, some dogs don't necessarily even want to pick up a live flyer, like a freshly killed bird, because they're like, I don't want to
Yeah.
get something that's live or that
Ew, the
fresh.
germs. Yeah,
Yeah.
Harry's bird was still kind of flapping around when he got it.
Right. And because he's born with the heavy chase and catch instinct, that just fires him up.
Yeah.
But with the dog that is not born with that, it takes teaching and experience and practice.
Yeah. So another factor is if they can see the winger station. So like you said, in a field trial, they're in white jackets and they're like kind of obvious where they are. But in number 10 of the 10 singles, the winger station was like behind a hay bale in a holding blind, pretty completely invisible. But they did have the noisemaker, so that helped. But
Yeah, that was crazy.
pretty camouflaged.
Yeah, too camouflaged.
Yeah. The number of objects thrown, so singles going to be easier, and then doubles harder and triples harder than that, because they have to remember.
Exactly. And if they're super excited from the first one or the second one, they may not even look at the third one.
Right.
Or like what happened with my dog Flyer often. In a triple was she'd look at the first one and then she'd head swing to the third one because it's usually a live flyer and just completely miss the second one,
Oh no. That's where experience might bite you.
and arousal. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of similar to that. So the time between the fall of the bird and when you send them. So like if it's a triple, it's going to be a long time between when the last one fell or the first one fell and the time that they're ready to retrieve it. So it kind of washes that picture out of their mind.
Such a good point. Yeah.
I think we kind of talked about this, but like the pull of the distractions. So if there's winger stations, that's going to be really loud to the dog's mind, and that might kind of like take a line that is curved towards the winger station, pull them off.
What do you mean?
So like, I think like I guess I'm thinking of obstacles. So like if there's a hill or the winger station, it might either push them off the line or pull them towards something.
Okay, gotcha. So we call that factors, which your whole list is of factors, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah. What did we talk about before? Yeah, so that's something to be considerate of. And then so if the wingers are making noises, that will really help get your dog's attention. In field trials, they're silent, so they have to know to look for the things.
Oh, so you mean sounds of the winger, such as the duck call or the.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
I actually, in one of the finished level tests that I did, there was no sounds.
No duck calls. Really?
Yeah, I don't know if that's only, I guess AKC always does sounds.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
Yeah,
not
you see it's
UK.
like some of them, but not all of them. Like up
Really?
to the judge. Yeah.
Huh. Well, they're so short.
Yeah, it was like not an issue. It surprised me, but I was like, ah, you can basically hear the zinger going off, so that's good enough.
Right.
Convergence, so if there's two stations and they throw towards each other, that can kind of mess up the picture in the dog's mind.
Yeah, there's a lot of different factors like that, like how the marks are set against each other. There's convergence, there's hip pocket, where there's a middle mark and a mark on the left, and it looks like the mark on the left, which is shorter or at the same distance, is throwing the bird into the hip pocket of the other gunner or station. So the dog, when they come back for the memory bird and look for that, they're gonna see the gun station in line with where the bird fell. Lots of stuff like that.
And that's like a whole can of worms. I'm curious
Total
about that.
can.
Okay, the last factor that I could think of is being on a hill. So, like on the last mark, we were up at the top of the hill looking down. And I'm actually not sure. I think it would be easier if you're at the bottom looking up because it's kind of like a theater. You can like see everything a little better. I'm not sure though.
Yeah, it just depends on the mark, but I'll give you an example. In the 10 singles event, I think it was, what was it, that fourth mark where the mark was uphill and the dogs had to push past previous marks and really go across a ditch and really push up the hill to get to the mark. And some dogs, a lot of dogs had to be handled up the hill to get that. So a dog to have to push up
They kind of like lose momentum running uphill.
and get distracted more easily. Yeah. Whereas going down, the same thing can happen, but it's like the focal point might be easier if they can see the station.
Right. And so many factors to think about. I used to think like marking was kind of just the least exciting part, like the retrievers are going to do it, but now like that's the whole game. That's the thing. Everything else is like foundational. You need all the retrieve to hand and lining up and being calm in the holding blinds. That trained stuff is like that's just a gimme. Like that or not a gimme, but like you can't really do this stuff without that. And this is the part that they're going to make hard to see who's the best of the best.
Exactly. That's where your experience of the handler comes in.
Yeah.
For sure. That was a good list, Eve.
Yeah.
Uh,
Did I
I'm
miss any?
I'm really impressed that you came up with this list, because you, let's face it, you've only been in the game for a few months,
Yeah.
and you've achieved a lot in those few months. I love that you're so observant that you could make this list.
Well, thank you.
A lot of people ask, What's the balance between the marking skills and all the other behaviors, like the delivery to hand and heel position, steadiness, pivoting? Like, that's something you're working on now, is pivoting for multiple marks, or at least influencing your dog's head to look for to the next station, not where they're distracted to look, but where you're pointing them. The mechanics too, like, have you ever watched, I know you have because you played water polo, I think, but have you ever watched swimming competitions where the mechanics really matter for the performance of, like, if you're watching speed swimming, the swimmer gets to the end of the lane, and what do they do at the end of the lane?
Flip turn.
They flip turn underwater and push off to set themselves up for a speedy return. Our mechanics on the line, with multiple marks especially, can either hinder or help your dog's memory of that mark and or their line that they take.
Totally.
So if they're coming back from the first mark, you want to be set up so that you're facing where the memory mark landed, so that when the dog comes into heel for delivery, they're already facing. You simply take the bird and they can keep their focus and give them a minute. Their ears prick up. They're like, yeah, I know what we're doing. And then all you have to do is send them. Whereas a lot of inexperienced people, the dog will come back with that bird. Maybe they don't have a good delivery yet, delivery to hand. So they take the bird in front because they just want to make sure it gets to their hand. So, okay, I took it, and the dog's like, oh, that's a pretty bird. Can I have it back? You're handing it to the judge, and the dog's watching you hand it to the judge. Where's the bird going? Can I have that? I want that. And then you're like, okay, heel, heel. And the dog's moving and coming into heel position, and you're tapping your leg. You're moving yourself to get them to look in the right place. And then finally, they might look in the right spot, and you're nervous. So they're looking in the general direction, and you kick them off. And they're like, oh, but that was fun. And where am I going again?
There was a third bird. What? Are you sure?
Right? So it's your
That's
mechanics.
exactly what happened in our finish test. I underestimated how much mechanics matter, and I was like, he knows where it is. I'll just grab the bird and send him off. I don't even know if I lined him up. I didn't like gave zero effort. I just trusted him. Turns out it's a team sport, and he needed a little more help.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Yeah.
What but one of to kind of add conflict to that, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was during the Master National when Reggie and I were test dog. It was actually during setup, so the week before. And I was running a different dog as a setup dog. And the judges were talking to each other. It was a triple. And one of the judges said, the thing people don't really understand is that if you were facing all the marks, like if your dog saw all the marks go off, and then you send them for the first two, and the dog comes back, yeah, they've got a lot that they're thinking about, and people start to get flustered and really try to over influence the dog. But he said, your dog will remember. Like, if your dog saw it in the first place, he'll remember. And if you just calm down and give the dog a minute, face him in the right spot, but let your dog settle and remember. And then you see the dog's head change. And when you see the head change, yeah, okay, go. That little tiny piece of advice like changed my whole perspective about triples and that last mark. It made me trust Reggie, and it made me use that during his test dog experience that week. And it was so fun. And it was like, oh my God, he's good. Like, Reggie's good at this.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah, that's such a good example of trusting your dog.
It's a combo, right? It's a combo.
Balance. Yeah.
So.
Cool. Well, that was a really good episode. I think I got a lot out of it, and hopefully our listeners did as well.
Yeah, that it's a rich topic, isn't it?
Sure is. I mean, it's the whole thing. That's what we got our dogs to do is go find things.
Exactly. Super fun.
Cool. Well, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks, Eve.
Bye.
Bye.